Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and let's get the latest on Hurricane Irma. The storm, now a Category 4, is making its way through the Bahamas today after battering the Turks and Caicos. Many islands saw major devastation, especially St. Martin and Barbuda and Anguilla in the British Virgin Islands. The evacuation continues in Florida. Governor Rick Scott urged residents again to heed the evacuation orders and told anyone having trouble leaving to call their local officials now for help.
We will do everything we can to get you out, but you have to call now if you're in an evacuation zone. We cannot save you in the middle of the storm.
Jeff Huffman is director and chief meteorologist of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. Jeff, yesterday you told us the storm track was going to go right over downtown Miami. What's the track today? And are people on the west coast of Florida now in harm's way more than they were before?
Absolutely. And the shift west has certainly means that maybe the eye will not go over Miami, but the eye wall still is very close to, and if not includes, much of Miami-Dade, Broward, and West Palm County, and Palm Beach County. So residents and anybody left in those areas, here's what I recommend. You need to spend whatever remaining time you have today ensuring that when all your communication is disrupted, you still have valuable information. I tweeted this morning on our Florida Storms account, you know, if you update our mobile app, it has all the newest information that did just change this year in terms of evacuation zones and open shelters so that you have a place to go if you really, really regret your last-minute decision to stay. So let me talk back to that track, though. It's important to also remember that there will be a storm surge hazard on both coasts that will be significant, and there will be a hurricane and even an extreme hurricane wind hazard on both coasts. And, Jeremy, even though the eye may not go over Miami, that onshore flow will be uninterrupted. Remember, that wind is coming off of water that has no friction to it for hours and hours and hours. So the wind may actually still be stronger right along the Miami Beach, South Beach area than it is, say, in central and western parts of Miami-Dade County.
What about a place like Orlando, which is somewhere that a lot of people have left South Florida to go to?
Well, I always hesitate in referring to hurricanes of the past, but in this case, it would make sense to refer to Charley, the storm that buzzsawed the state in 2004, and the fact that there will likely be significant wind damage inland all the way up the peninsula. I am expecting power outages to basically include the entire peninsula of Florida, maybe even up to Tallahassee from this storm, from both coasts. So inland, if you did evacuate to Orlando, you're certainly in a safer place than you would be in South Florida near the coast. And here's what I've been telling to everyone inland from basically I-4 northward. You have put yourself in a position that if you don't do something stupid, you're going to survive this storm. You're not going to you can move indoors into a central, you know, room. You know, don't go under trees or power lines. Don't drive through flooded roadways. If you enter a tornado warning, start protecting your head. If you follow those instructions and you're inland from I-4 northward, you're going to survive this storm. We see it every hurricane. It's the folks that make bad decisions during the event or even more so after the event that, you know, they basically set their own fate there.
Now, we're looking far ahead here, but as you look at the track of the storm, it's not going to take that long for it to start to move out of Florida early next week. What about a place like Atlanta? It looks like it's going to go right through Atlanta, and that's, again, a place that a lot of Floridians have evacuated to.
Yes, and it's going to be an inconvenience, but it's not going to be a severe hazard there. But it's important to note that, you know, flash flooding is a really important thing to consider if you're going to try to start driving back to Florida, or maybe you're still trying to navigate through Georgia and South Carolina because you did evacuate. There will be heavy rain and potential flash flooding, especially up in the hills of the Appalachians and up in the Smokies from all the rain that'll be coming in from Irma. Irma's probably going to make a northwestward turn toward Atlanta and Tennessee and Kentucky and not move up the East Coast. So for listeners and residents in the Mid-Atlantic states and the Northeast, we're gaining confidence that this will not be a significant storm for you.
One more thing, Jeff. There have been reports as people have been evacuating of gas shortages. Something like half of the gas stations in places like Tampa don't have any gas left. Do you expect a lot of people are going to get stuck on the highways?
That's a concern. So there's a period of time that you can wait it out. I saw the lines here in Gainesville blocking traffic, people waiting for the next delivery of fuel. Hmm. You do have some time to wait that out, at least in Central and North Florida, but there will be a time where you're going to have to say, okay, I tried my best. I need to go shelter in place because it's coming. And remember, traffic will be stopped on all the interstates once they see the last car go that can beat the hurricane or tropical storm force winds, I think it is. So a lot of interstates will close in South Florida, meaning your time will be up, starting probably tonight or tomorrow morning.
That's Jeff Huffman, Director and Chief Meteorologist of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. Jeff, thanks again.
All right, Jeremy.
Well, let's hear more now about that massive hack at Equifax, one of the country's three largest credit reporting agencies, which announced yesterday that the Social Security numbers and sensitive financial data of 143 million American customers had been stolen. That's nearly half the country. Equifax CEO Richard Smith said yesterday that the company has known about the hack for more than a month.
On July 29th of this year, we discovered that attackers had gained unauthorized access to certain Equifax data files. We acted immediately to stop the intrusion. We promptly engaged a leading cybersecurity firm, which has been conducting a comprehensive forensic review to determine the scope of the intrusion.
Well, the company is also facing questions about news that top executives made a previously unplanned sale of stock worth about $2 million in the days after the attack was discovered. Let's bring in Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchirai. He's a cybersecurity expert and staff writer at the Vice Tech website Motherboard. Lorenzo, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll start with the fact that consumers are just now finding out about this. Do you have questions about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's unclear why it took so long for Equifax to notify everyone. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's usually some time between discovering the breach, investigating what happened, and finding out exactly what the damage is. But some people are rightfully a little mad and angry that it took so long.
Well, talk about what's here. It's not something that necessarily a consumer might go to. It's information that's given to Equifax by others. What does Equifax have?
Well, we're actually talking about credit card numbers, 209,000, more or less. You know, that's actually not too bad. You know, like it's annoying to get your credit card stolen, but you can replace it. These days, it's a relatively painless process. But in this case, the worst thing is that they lost social security numbers and home addresses and full names, date of birth, and in some cases, even driver license numbers. So if you have that, you're basically, you can impersonate anyone in front of everyone. So you can, you know, you can pretend to be me in front of my telephone company and get like, you know, change my plan or go to my bank and pretend to be me. You can do a whole lot of like very malicious attacks.
Yeah, go to pension plans, go into anything that people had considered private. How did this happen? Because Equifax had another breach just a year ago. W-2 tax and salary data was stolen. Why can't they protect against this?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions that they will have to answer at some point. And, you know, we can expect lawsuits or maybe even an FTC or, you know, even the DOJ investigation into this breach. But yes, I mean, given the past incidents, this is not looking very good.
Well, now the company said it's creating a website that people can use to see if they are victims of this hack. But it requires you to put in the last six digits of your social security number and your last name. People might be leery of giving them information. What else can you do to see if this involved you?
That's the only thing you can do right now. And unfortunately, the website itself wasn't very well designed. And one of my colleagues pointed it out yesterday in an article. She tried to see if she was a victim. And instead of, you know, getting a clear answer, yes, you were part of the breach, what the website tells you is check back on September 13th to get your customer ID number or something like that. And it's very confusing. You know, you're like, you might be distressed. You might be thinking, okay, am I part of this? And you go to the website and the website doesn't really give you an answer.
Well, and Equifax is also saying it's giving those free credit watch services to every American consumer, not just its customers. It lasts for a year. This is standard. If you've ever had a security breach like this, you get these letters offering you this free service. But on the other hand, then you become involved with these companies that get hacked. Look, does any of this matter, you know, contacting the company or finding out if, in fact, someone has made away with social security numbers?
Yeah, as a consumer, unfortunately, there's not much you can do other than, you know, being angry. One thing that you could do is apply a credit freeze to your credit. That basically stops anyone from checking your credit or using your your identity without you knowing.
Look, we're hearing security analysts like one who spoke with the New York Times say on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of risk to consumers, this is a 10. How can consumers possibly protect themselves from this in advance? Is there any way? Is there something that you can do or not do so that your information doesn't even get to these companies?
I mean, unfortunately, the answer is no. The way the system is designed right now, we have to give up our social security numbers on multiple occasions to your landlord, to
get cable TV.
Yeah, to the insurance company, to your phone company. I mean, it's like, and they themselves then give it to companies like Equifax. So once you give up your social security number, which you have to do if you want to live a normal life, then it's out there and it might get stolen.
What questions do you have about the fact that some Equifax top executives had a big stock sale that had been unplanned just the days after they discovered this breach?
Yeah, that doesn't look very good. The company is saying that they didn't know about the breach and, you know, they just decided to sell their stock. And by chance, it happened a couple of days after the breach. I mean, it's possible. It just doesn't look very good right now.
No. Lorenzo Franceschi Bighirai, cybersecurity expert, staff writer at the Vice Tech website Motherboard. Lorenzo, thank you.
Thank you so much.
There are estimates that flooding from Hurricane Harvey damaged at least 500,000 vehicles, maybe as many as 1 million. So what happens to all those cars and trucks now? Joining us from Detroit is Michelle Krebs, who's a senior analyst for Auto Trader. Michelle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And what happens to a vehicle that gets caught in floodwaters? Is it totaled?
Well, a lot of things can happen, and we won't know till all the waters recede from Harvey, but we think as many as 300,000 to 500,000 vehicles could be damaged or totally destroyed. Some will be, you know, discarded, taken to the junkyard, but others, they could wind their way back to the market, and that's where consumers need to be wary.
Yeah, well, we saw that after Hurricane Katrina, that a lot of cars that had been damaged in Katrina ended up being sold perhaps further up north, far away from the storm, to unsuspecting consumers.
Right, and what we may see, not only we may see these cars in other locations well beyond Houston, but also over time, cars showing up, you know, years later even.
Hmm. And is there any way to tell if a car has been damaged by floodwaters?
Well, the very first thing people should do is do their homework online. Find the VIN number on the car. It's usually on the side of the door or the window. And look that up in a car history report. A good thing to find out is where were they? If it was in Houston, you might, that should raise a red flag. And then sometimes the titles say that it's a flood car or a salvage car. However, that's not a guarantee because sometimes there's a lag time in getting that designation. Beyond that, you really have to use all of your senses to inspect the car. Does it smell musty? Is there mud residue or what looks like water damage or corrosion underneath the vehicle or on the brakes and shocks? Touch the ceiling of the car. See if it feels like it's been damp or if it's drooping a bit. And then if you're still concerned, I would take it to an independent mechanic, or there are independent inspecting firms. They will, for a fairly minimal fee, inspect the car to make sure it's okay.
What about a car that is just slightly damaged? If we've got a listener in Houston whose car was flooded a bit but not totally, what can they do?
You know, if the water didn't get into the car or get up under the undercarriage, the underbody of the car, perhaps they're okay. One of the big signs we tell people is look where the spare tire is and see if there's water or mud residue in there. Hmm. Look to see if it's gone into the car. If you look under the seat, there's little tracks that your seat runs on. See if there's any residue there or corrosion, and that's a sign that that's probably too much water.
And if that is the case, how does insurance come into play here? Are they going to pay for all of this?
Well, no. You know, some cars were uninsured, but and some did not have comprehensive insurance that would have covered that. Insurance won't cover all of them.
Mm. Meanwhile, obviously, there are a lot of people who don't have their car to get around Houston, and Houston is not a city where it's all that easy in some places to get around by, let's say, public transport. So what can those people do? We've already heard about a lot of demand at the car rental companies in Houston.
Houston is a very car-centric city. People really depend on their cars there. And, of course, we expect that that'll be one of the first issues they address because they want to get their life back to normal. They want to get back to work. So we already are seeing on our websites traffic and applications for financing of a new car soar. And, you know, automakers are offering some special deals for people who were affected by the floods. So the issue is going to be getting inventory there, but we are seeing automakers and dealership groups start moving their inventories around from other parts of the country. And there's plenty of it that they'll bring to Houston.
Because some dealerships in Houston lost a lot of their cars in this storm.
Right, right. I mean, there's big companies like AutoNation and that have chains of dealerships around the country, and they lost a lot. So they are bringing them in from other dealerships. The good thing is inventories of new cars have been pretty high, so there will be inventory available to move to other places.
There are so many things that people who are in the path of a storm like this have to think about, getting obviously themselves and their families to safety, maybe their pets to safety. Is there something, though, that people should be doing that they're not doing to get their car to a place where it won't be destroyed as 500,000 or more were in this storm?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that we are hearing is that people are being advised to take their cars to like parking structures and parking them on higher levels. Certainly, you can't do that with a whole city of Miami, for instance. And of course, a lot of people are evacuating. But yes, that is something to consider. I'm not sure everybody has the ability to do that, however.
That's Michelle Krebs, who is a senior analyst for Auto Trader. Michelle, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, as we're hearing, as Florida braces for Irma, Houstonians are still figuring out cars, cleaning up. We don't want to forget them. Joe Stortz lives in the Maryland Estates neighborhood, about four houses down from Braes Bayou, which overflowed its banks and flood area, turning streets into rivers, his ranch house into a pond. He helped rescue his elderly neighbors and joins us now by Skype. Joe, what an ordeal. How you doing?
I'm holding up. I would say it all started with my daughter posted a Facebook photo of our flooded Atwell Drive with the title Lake Atwell. Mm-hmm. And just a few minutes later, she got a frantic message. Could your dad check on my mom and dad? They live next door to him. And, mm-hmm. you know, I walked in waist deep water. I pounded on their door and I couldn't open it. It was wedged shut.
Yeah, sure.
And a kayaker asked if I needed help, and two others helped him and me force open the door. And inside this one-story home is a crusty old 96-year-old Navy veteran, and he was floating on like a tabletop. And his wife, who's 89, she was sitting in a wheelchair, and her water was up to her knees, and she was shivering. She was in shock. And a kayaker goes up to the roof, and he flagged down the Sikorsky helicopter that had been circling the area. It drops a man, a brave man, down, and it drops a raft. And the old folks went by raft to their daughter's home in southwest Houston, a few miles away, and they're safe, and they're staying with the family. And
you know, I'm thinking, you know, the day before, it was just an ordinary day in Maryland Estates, and then suddenly this incredible scene. You know, they're talking a lot about some of the psychological aftermath of this storm. Are you feeling that? Like the terror is not firm?
Right. You have choices of whether to stay or go. This was my first time to have ever flooded. I'm one of the lucky ones. I've got flood insurance. I figured I've probably paid over $40,000 in premiums in the 27 years I lived there, and my lender required it.
Well, but as you said, $40,000, it's going to cost a lot more than that to fix your home. And so you're still coming out on the right end, I think. I mean, I know you're, like a lot of people there, you're doing this yourself, right? Taking out carpet, wood floors. What are you doing?
My parquet floors had to be ripped up. And they also want to take out 4 feet of your what I'd call wallboard around so the studs are exposed and they can dry out and it can dry out the rest of the house.
Well, you got kitchen cabinets that are floor level. They have to go.
Yes.
We understand. Do you have a fireplace?
I do.
Yeah, because people say if water goes in there, it's got to go.
I can't remove the entire fireplace. It's the place is built around it, and it just barely got. We'll dry that. I'm hopeful. Yeah. The limits on all these policies are $250,000 for the structure and $100,000 for the contents. But it's like any insurance. You don't want to collect on the benefit because it means something you would never want to happen happened.
Well, your adult daughter lost her apartment and her car, so she's staying with you. And this is so powerful. The photographs are what really get everybody when they see people trying to save photographs. And we understand you've been seeing old family pictures floating around.
I have. You try to dry them out on the patio, and all of a sudden you see fire ants walking across your loved ones. You know, it's a very bizarre scene to see.
Well, especially since we understand you're suddenly confronting photos of your late wife, who died just in June. We're so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. I guess when it comes to loss, our loss is our relative. I got a foot and a half of water in my home. I lost my furniture and some valuables, and it can all be replaced. The real loss, you know, my mom died in March, and then my wonderful wife of 35 years, Karen, died of pancreatic cancer. She was only 62. This year, I've had time to reflect about life and wonder, why are we here? And now I think I know that we're here for each other. And this is H-Town. We'll recover. And like the rest of the people here, I'm just a neighbor helping a neighbor in a very diverse city called Houston, Texas. We're strangers band together.
Yeah. Well, Joe Storz, there of Houston, thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, Robin. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Football fans who tune into the NFL's regular season openers on the Fox network this Sunday will see something new, not on the field, but in the commercial breaks. Fox is debuting a series of 6-second TV spots in the broadcast. Here's an example, an Old Spice ad that shows a young man's armpit emitting a shower of water.
Tell your armpits to stop crying like a baby with Old Spice Sweat Defense.
Okay, so that's what that was, if you've seen it. Here now, media analyst John Carroll joins us to provide a quick take on this quick format. John, 6-second commercials, I feel I've seen them like online, but really there's not enough like kibbles and bits out there already?
There might be, but they're called snackable spots, and you can blame the internet for them. The younger viewers especially have gotten used to these non-skippable 6-second ads that are in front of YouTube videos called bumper ads.
Right.
And so marketers are looking and saying, maybe this will work on TV too.
And this is primetime real estate right before the kickoffs.
Right. And there's really two reasons for that. It's pretty smart. One is it's a higher profile debut for them. And two is if they're successful, they could charge a premium for that positioning as opposed to during the game.
Right. 6 seconds. Well, Fox tested this format with their target audience recently during the Teen Choice Awards. This was in August. The New York Times posted this clip of the commercial break.
Stick around. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Give me a G.
Hot mess, eat a Snickers. Your body is changing into a body that needs Old Spice.
This fall, Empire moves to 8, followed by Lee Daniels' Star at 9, Wednesday, September 27th on Fox.
Dad puts people like us in jail.
Wait, and when you're in jail, do you get something in your armpits? I mean, that was a lot of information in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's like being beaten to death with croutons. It's just an endless series of visuals flashing in front of your eyes. But look what they did in 30 seconds. They got two commercials in and two promos for other Fox programs. So it's efficient and it tells people, don't go away because we're coming right back.
Right, so you feel that things are going faster. But what happened, how does this benefit marketers?
Marketers say that, it makes them strip their message down. These ads aren't to provide information. These ads are for brand recognition.
Well, you know what? This is so perfect for the age of Twitter. They're already tweeting.
Exactly. And so, you're compressing these things. And, marketers say, look, if people don't know who you are, they're not going to give you the time of the time of day, never mind 15 or 30 seconds. So 6 seconds says, we're here. And then maybe you have a chance in other venues, other platforms to provide more information or to expand on your image.
We'll talk more about the economics and the financial sense for broadcasting cable networks.
Well, it's good economics because basically they're charging the same for a 6-second spot as they charge for a 15-second spot. So you get 40% of the time for the same amount of money. So I think, there's not that many of them out there right now, but I think if they get some traction, networks, cable and broadcast networks will find them appealing because economically they could be good news.
So might fans because they've complained about commercial breaks. This will speed up the game. It's good for the game, some would say.
Right. A lot of people think of NFL football games are an endless series of commercials interrupted by a forward pass. So, they want to speed up as much as they can. They want to reduce the number of commercial breaks. And by doing shorter ads, they can do that.
And they might even use a play clock after the extra point, move the game faster. So it's all going to be fast forward. John Carroll, media analyst for Here and Now and a mass communications professor at Boston University on these new 6-second ads, this fast-paced life we're embarking on. John, thank you.
Thank you.
And Monday marks 16 years since the tragic attacks of 9/11. So today, we're going to take a listen to some music associated with that day in a special edition of the Here and Now DJ Sessions. And joining us is Rita Houston, DJ and program director for WFUV in New York. She was with the station the day of those attacks. Rita, welcome to Here and Now.
Jeremy, very nice to connect with you. Thank you for having me.
And you've brought us some songs that you played that day that people actually called in and asked for. Here is Elton John's classic, Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters.
Until you've seen this trash can dream come true, you stand at the edge while people run you through. And I thank the Lord there's people out there like you. I thank the Lord there's people out there like you. While Mona Lisas and Mad Hatters, sons of bankers, sons of lawyers, turn around and say good morning to the night. For unless they see the sky, but they can't, and that is why. They know not if it's dark outside or light.
Now, you say this is one of the songs listeners asked for the most on that day and in the weeks to follow.
That's true. It was a song that really provided a lot of comfort. Certainly, Elton and Bernie wrote that in 72. When they first visited New York. But so many things happened emotionally with music, I think, on September 11th, where songs just took on whole new meaning. And I think Elton's Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters was a song that used to mean one thing. And then for some reason on September 11th, it was a song that listeners were asking for time and time again. We played it quite a bit in the days and weeks following. Lyrically, I think the hope of that song, comes through. I thank the Lord there's people out there like you. I thank the Lord there's people out there like you. Mm. You almost felt as New Yorkers, we felt as if Elton, was talking to us at a time when comfort was needed and music lovers were turning to music to find that solace.
And he actually played that song at Madison Square Garden a month after the attacks in October of 2001.
That's right. And it is, for Elton's songs, the lyrics of that song in general, the lyrics are just very direct and there's a real emotional quality to it. And I think that's why people connected with it. And it's one of those songs that even for me now, if I hear it, your eyes well up. It still hits you, that song, in a way, or at least me.
All right, well, next you wanted us to hear the songwriter Ryan Adams. This song was originally scheduled to be released on September 11th, 2001. It was actually released shortly after. It's called New York, New York.
Well, I shuffled through the city on a 4th of July, had a firecracker waiting to blow, breaking like a rifle who was making his way to the cities of Mexico. Living in a promenade on Avenue A, had a tall on a corner of town. Had myself a lover who was finer than gold, but I've been broken, I've been busted up since. Love don't play any games with me anymore like she did before. The world won't
timing of that is just eerie. In the video, which was filmed on September 7th, Adams is singing with the Twin Towers in the backdrop.
Artists are plugged into a different plane, and when you hear stories like that, it really does just remind us that I'm sure Ryan wouldn't cop to knowing something that none of us knew.
Right.
But there is something about the creative spirit, I think, when it's open. In any case, yeah, the video is now very eerie to watch. A much younger Ryan Adams, you know, on the promenade in Brooklyn Heights with Lower Manhattan, you know, as his backdrop, and all the New York references in that song, Bring It Home. That song, I think, is interesting because I think it was part comfort, but also this ever sad reminder of that day. I think when we hear New York, New York, New Yorkers, you know, it does bring you back to that day.
And Adams has said it's a poorly written song, even though it is still one of his most popular.
It is one of his best songs, right? He can hardly get off stage without playing that song. And factually, if you try to fact check that as a New Yorker, some of the addresses don't quite exactly add up. But we'll cut Ryan Adams the poetic license slack to create a place called Houston and Third. Those two streets don't actually intersect.
Interesting. All right, well, up next is the singer-songwriter Dar Williams. This is Better Things.
Here's hoping all the days ahead won't be as bitter as the ones behind you. Be an optimist instead, and somehow happiness will find you. Forget what happened yesterday. I know that better things are on their way. It's really good to see you rocking out and having fun, living like you just begun. Accept your life and what it brings. I hope tomorrow you find better things.
Now, this is a song originally by the Kinks from the early 80s. Williams recorded her version in 1997, but as I'm listening to it, I can hear that, you know, it probably takes on a whole new meaning after 9/11 as well.
And it did bring some optimism and hope, and I think that was a big part, too, of what WFUV meant to people in the time after September 11th. The news outlets were obviously covering the news of the time, so it did become, for us, trying to play songs that brought comfort. And for some reason, Dar was always a big artist for FUV at that time especially. And her version of that tune was like, yeah, here's to what tomorrow brings, you know. I hope tomorrow you'll find better things. And we did hang on to that then, you know.
Well, we have time for one more. This is Paul Simon with Was a Sunny Day.
Was a sunny day. Not a cloud was in the sky. Not a negative word was heard from the peoples passing by. 'Twas a sunny day. All the birdies in the trees and the radio singing song, all the favorite melodies.
Paul Simon, somebody with such a strong connection to New York, and I remember him after 9/11 appearing on Saturday Night Live in their first episode after they came back. Why is this song linked to 9/11 for you?
We certainly did play America and Sounds of Silence quite a bit around that time. This one was really more of a personal pick for me because when I think of September 11th, I always think of what a gorgeous day it was and how the most gorgeous day became the most not gorgeous day. Mm. Anytime we spin that song, it does take me back to that day. Or anytime I see a gorgeous day, you kind of look up and go, wow. And that, I think, is the role that music has played in helping us, and the role that music has played artists like Paul Simon or, you know, even Springsteen writing The Rising after September 11th, and the comfort that those songs have brought to people. It's so important.
Are you going to be playing these songs on Monday on WFUV?
Yeah, you know, it always gets heavy, and it's always, you know, you try to walk the line between the heaviness of it and time marches on part of it, too. It will be September 11th, and anytime you think of the date, I think all New Yorkers will be, you know, it'll just be in the air, and, you know, the Freedom Tower will be lit up, I'm sure, and it'll be in all of our hearts and minds. And I think at WFUV, we will be playing, you know, many of these songs. Love's in Need of Love Today, I think, will be another one. George Harrison's Give Me Love. It will all be a part of the mix.
Well, and I think people across the country, in a different way, will have New York in their hearts and minds, and of course, the Pentagon and Virginia and the victims of the plane crash in Pennsylvania. So much to think about. Thank you for bringing some music to the occasion. Rita Houston, DJ and program director for WFUV in New York. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Hurricane Irma passed over the British Overseas Territory of Anguilla Wednesday. Property was destroyed. At least one person died. But while Irma battered the building and windows of Radio Anguilla, it did not seem to rattle the nerves of 19-year-old reporter Nisha Dupuy.
We are doing the best that we can. We're operating here on a generator, and we are experiencing stuff. But we are here with you. We're here for you to contact us, call, to let us know what is going on. 497-2218.
She is broadcasting. Nisha Dupuy joins us now from Anguilla. Nisha, what sound? You stayed at the mic, taking calls, shutters coming off, wind and rain coming in?
Yes, that is exactly correct. You can hear the wind just banging against the shutters, even with just tropical storm force winds. And as it increased, it started to get worse and worse. There were leaves coming up from above the shutters, rocks just escaping into the shutters until initially could not withstand the force of this Category 5 hurricane, completely blew off a few of our shutters at Radio. We were standing directly where the shutters blew off while speaking on air. And someone definitely had to hold on the window with a piece of material just to prevent the pressure from building too much in Radio. It was a very, very traumatic experience.
Well, yes, but you stayed there. First of all, you had no idea where your own family was. We understand this must run in your family because your mother also went to do her work, which was at a hospital.
Yes.
So you both were doing your jobs. Weren't you a little bit scared?
I was terrified, to be honest. So when it really sank in for me is the 911 calls that we were getting, because we were also relaying information to the Department of Disaster Management. And there are people calling this one man. I'll never forget what it sounded like speaking to him. He had a baby in the room, and his shutters were being blown out. And it's like, what do we do next? Mm-hmm. And it's really just about trying to stay calm as possible, and just trying to guide people with the proper steps to take. A lot of Angolians felt the impact. A lot of people are hurt. A lot of people are affected. And when I say hurt, I don't mean physically. I mean emotionally, the extent of the loss on the island. And it's right now we're preparing for another hurricane.
Hurricane Jose, which is bearing down. I mean, what do you do if all the shutters are blown away and most of the structures there have been damaged? What are you going to do?
I mean, the shutters, they have to put back up. The work has to be done. At the end of the day, we are the only radio station that will be up during the hurricane. But it is a concrete structure, so we're trusting that it can hold up and withstand. But we know definitely still have to go out and fulfill the duties of the people, because they're afraid. They're at home. They're going to situations. In one instance, a pole was sparking, and someone is calling, you know, terrified. So definitely tonight we're going to do the same thing that we always do, go out, and we're just going to do our best to serve and just hope that everything goes out as well. Are we afraid? Yes. Do we know what the outcome will be? No. Are we going to try to keep it together? We are, so the rest of the world can know. And yeah.
Well, Nisha, you have got your message out loud and clear. We should say your mother, who went to her hospital, whose roof had blown off, is okay as well.
Yeah, she is. She's been working triple shifts, and so many other staff at the Princess Alexandra Hospital, they've been going non-stop, just trying. The roof was blowing out. They were flooding. I mean, when she sent me the voice note, I had to take a moment and just pace in the hallway, because here you are and you don't know what's happening with your family. She's at work trying to serve and susceptible to the force.
Well, Nisha, you make me proud of the profession. But listen, this is an overseas British territory. What would you want the British to know that you need? Because we understand there's been some criticism.
Well, I've been driving through the area, and the basic supplies at this moment, what I would definitely say are the basic supplies, you know, food, water, there are people, mothers and children who have no place to sleep. I mean, when you're holding a baby in your arms and you can't find housing, so there was some word from the chief minister. I sat in on an interview yesterday, and the chief minister did mention that they are working with the UK. Not sure what the exact progress on or the official word on that is yet, but there are a lot of relief efforts going on with the Red Cross and all of the other associations. We are definitely doing our part on the island, clearing out the debris, preparing for what is to come tonight or early tomorrow morning. So anything from the outside world.
Nisha Dupuy, a 19-year-old reporter with Radio Anguilla. Nisha, thank you, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Stay safe.
No, you stay safe. Thank you.
It's an honor.
How about that, Jeremy?
Wow.
19, and she's going to be manning that microphone as a new hurricane comes in. Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.